Today is a very special day. It's the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Today is also, we're remembering many Vaishnava Acharyas, and we're remembering contemporary Vaishnava saints. Today is also the disappearance of His Holiness Gaura Govinda Maharaj, who was an illustrious personality within our movement. I'll try to share some things with you. We're going to speak very shortly about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then we'll speak something on the Bhagavatam. You are also going to be reciting all the verses. So I will go on till about like 25 minutes, yeah, 25 minutes, something like that, and then you'll be reciting the Bhagavatam. So I'll try to share some words with you in that time.
So
Is that okay?
You can't watch it once you finish.
Can you lower the voice then, please?
Hare Krishna, please, can you mute your mics? Thank you very much.
Om Adimirantasi Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Over the ages, many illustrious Vaishnavas have come to the world. Vaishnavas who come to show the path back to Krishna. Today we're honoring one such great Vaishnava who was named Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not just an amazing sadhu, a saintly person. Indeed, he was a saintly person. He was a sadhu. Not just that, but he was a guru, a teacher, someone who was bringing knowledge and making others illustrious. But he was also not just a guru, he was an acharya. An acharya is a very special type of sadhu, a very special type of guru. Sometimes people wonder why so much emphasis is placed on acharyas. Because acharyas benefit the world in another dimension. A guru is someone who will protect and deliver their own disciples. But an acharya protects and delivers an entire sampradaya, an entire disciplic line. His offering is on a different level. A guru will make many, many disciples. Yeah, gurus make disciples. But an acharya doesn't just make disciples, but he makes disciples who are of such a high quality that they themselves become gurus. And therefore we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was such an illustrious personality that he could have a disciple like Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who became the Jagat Guru. A guru is one who teaches his own disciples in this particular point in time. But an acharya, their teachings stand generation after generation. And even after the acharya has gone, people will go back to that acharya's teachings as a reference point. Every guru is not necessarily an acharya. Every sadhu is not necessarily an acharya. But an acharya is someone who is a sadhu and a guru to a completely different level. And therefore, in our tradition of Vaishnavism, we have so many acharyas like this, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was definitely one of them. When they once asked Srila Prabhupada, can you say something about your spiritual master? Srila Prabhupada was almost speechless, and he looked at the devotee and he said, what can I say? My spiritual master was a Vaikuntha man. Yes, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was a Vaikuntha man, someone who had come on a mission. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was willing to go to any length in order to bring people to Krishna. He was willing to innovate. He was willing to take all kinds of risks. He was willing to put his own life on the line. And he was willing to reach out as far as he could in order to help other people. If a Vaishnava does not embody compassion within their heart, then we cannot really say they are a Vaishnava. Because a Vaishnava means para dukkha dukhi, which means one who sees other people's distress as their own. And when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in this world and performed his pastimes, then we saw that his compassion was so great that he was willing to do all of these things. He was willing to risk his life. Many, many times, one time the police, they came to, the Indian police, they came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and they said, you're speaking out so heavily against all these gurus and so many other charlatans. And we want to let you know, Swamiji, that people are coming to us, offering us bribes to assassinate you, to kill you. They looked at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They said, look, we're Indian police. It's not that we don't take bribes and kill people. This is what we do. But you are a sadhu, so we're not going to do it to you. But we want you to be aware that people are trying to kill you. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not moved in one little bit. He said, I will continue my mission because I've come here to reestablish Shuddha Bhakti, pure bhakti, pure spirituality. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was willing to make all kinds of adjustments in order to bring people to Krishna, in order to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. He did the unthinkable. At one point in his own temple, in order to invite influential people, governors, to come there so that he could influence them and thereby spread Krishna consciousness to another level, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commissioned that there can be meat served within the temple compounds in order to ensure those people came, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a higher objective in mind. And his higher objective was that by ultimately connecting these personalities, Krishna consciousness will spread further. One disciple came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, Guru Maharaj, we're getting criticized. We're getting criticized that we're doing such things. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur just looked at him and he said, you don't know. You don't know that 100 lifetimes ago, I made a vow that I will do whatever it takes to spread the Sankirtan movement. And the disciple realized this is on another level. This personality is on another level. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was making such sacrifices in order to prepare himself to help as many people as possible. For 10 years in a row, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sat down in one place and every day was chanting 192 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra. He was on a mission to chant 1 billion names of Krishna. Why, you may ask, why such a sacrifice? Because he felt as though if he would do this, then it would prepare him to genuinely help others and become empowered to help others find true happiness. So where will we ever come across such a personality who has such compassion, who is constantly meditating on others? They say we live in a world in which it's called the me society. Everyone is just thinking about themselves. My house, my security, my future, my desires, my happiness, me, me, me. But then you come across a personality like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who lost himself in service to others. They say you really find yourself by forgetting about yourself. And when we forget about our own selfish desires and we begin to serve, then in that service, we actually unlock the real true purpose of life.
Utapa Prabhu.
Yes. I thought someone was asking a question. So yes, this is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We can say so many things about him, and we would love to say so many things about him. But today our time is limited. And so these were some words, and let us deeply remember his spirit, which was to sacrifice for Krishna, to take a risk for Krishna, to be willing to innovate and reach out and connect to others to Krishna. And in this way, to live a life of service, a life of selflessness, a life of compassion, because this is real life, a life in which one is focused on giving. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai. And now we are moving to the Bhagavatam. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was like a walking encyclopedia. He knew all the shastras. He had all the teachings embedded, not just within his mind and intelligence, but within his heart. Hare Krishna. Sorry, if we could just mute, if possible. I think Shobana Mataji, if you just mute. Yeah, thank you.
Hare Krishna, can you please mute your mics? Thank you.
So we are moving to the Bhagavatam now. And for the next 15 minutes, I'll try to share with you something on the Bhagavatam. You all are reading the Bhagavatam every single day, as I understand.
Yes,
please. And you've reached the fourth canto, 20th chapter of the Bhagavatam. And you're hearing about a most wonderful personality, whose name is Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj is said to be the incarnation of Krishna's Palana Shakti. Krishna has different Shaktis, and one of those Shaktis is Palana, which means to protect. And therefore, Prithu Maharaj came as a representative, as an empowered avatar, incarnation of Krishna, who came to protect the world, who came to be an ideal leader, who came in order to uplift society and civilization after it had gone through a very difficult time and the nefarious activities of King Vena, which you have already read about. In today's chapter, a beautiful lesson is coming out. And it's a lesson which is so relevant to each one of us. Before I share with you the lesson, I'll just quickly summarize how we get to this point. Prithu Maharaj, in order to do his service of being a ruler, of being a king, he begins to prepare to do 100 Ashvamedha Yajnas. So he does these Ashvamedha Yajnas, and as he's doing his 100 Ashvamedha Yajnas, he gets to 99. And as he gets to 99 Ashvamedha Yajnas, and he's just about to fulfill his 100th one, then Indra finds out, and Indra thinks, oh my God, if he does 100 Ashvamedha Yajnas, he may assert my position. And therefore, Indra becomes very envious. Indra becomes very insecure. Indra becomes very, very jealous and concerned. And therefore, Indra does many, many things to try to prevent the 100th horse sacrifice from taking place. So he does many things. He comes, he steals the horse, he dresses up as a fake sannyasi, many, many things Indra does. And finally, when Prithu realizes Indra is behind everything, blocking his 100th sacrifice, Prithu goes out and says, I will have to deal with Indra myself. So Prithu goes out to hunt Indra down. And as he's going to hunt Indra down, Brahma intercepts. And Brahma says, Prithu, where are you going? Prithu says, I'm going to kill Indra. Why? Because Indra has stolen my 100th horse and I need to complete 100 sacrifices. Brahma looks at Prithu Maharaj and says, let it go. Let it go. You've already done 99 sacrifices. You're already blessed by Krishna. You're already empowered in so many ways. You don't need to worry that you've not done the 100th sacrifice. Just let it go. And Prithu Maharaj, hearing those words, he decides to just let it go. And as he continues in his sacrificial arena, foregoing the 100th sacrifice, then Vishnu himself appears in the sacrificial arena. And this is what you'll read about today. Vishnu appears in the sacrificial arena and Vishnu gives many, many wonderful instructions. He glorifies Prithu Maharaj in many, many ways. But one key lesson that he gives to Prithu Maharaj in this chapter is he tells Prithu Maharaj, you must learn to forgive. He looks at Prithu Maharaj and he says, it doesn't matter what Indra's done. Whatever Indra did, he did it out of envy. He did it out of some temporary illusion. He did it out of material desire. But you don't need to worry. As a Vaishnav, you must learn the art of forgiveness. And so wonderfully, Prithu Maharaj had this quality of forgiveness that even though Indra had impeded his sacrifice, Prithu Maharaj never held any grudge against him. How many of us on this call are holding grudges against people? How many of us have some bad feeling or negativity towards other people? How many of us are remembering some difficult thing that we encountered in the past and are holding on to that within our hearts? If we don't learn to forgive, life will be very, very difficult to live. They say, one who can apologize is the bravest. One who can forgive is the strongest. And one who can learn to forget the injustices that have been committed against them are the happiest. We must learn the quality of forgiveness. This is what Vishnu is underlining to Prithu Maharaj in the 20th chapter of the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. The goal of life is not to remember all of the terrible things that people have done against us. The goal of life is not to remember all of the difficult interactions and relationships and frictions and conflicts that we had. The goal of life is not to remember how irrational people can be. The goal of life is to remember the amazing things that Krishna and his devotees are doing for us at every moment. But shall I share something with you? If our headspace is hijacked by all of the negativity and bad feelings that we're holding on to against other people, dare I say it, against other devotees, there will be no space within our consciousness to remember the amazing things that Krishna has done, is doing and will continue to do for us. Forgiveness, if we don't learn that quality, it will be practically impossible to develop Krishna consciousness. Ask yourself if any of these things sound familiar to you, and then you will understand that there's someone in your life you need to forgive. Are there people in your life that you do everything you can to avoid? Maybe you haven't forgiven those people inside of you. Are there people who, when you hear they're going through difficulties, inside of you, some happiness comes? Maybe because you haven't forgiven them. Do you sometimes relive a situation again and again in your mind? An interaction, an exchange. Maybe we need to forgive that situation. Do you sometimes have an image of someone in your mind and it makes you annoyed, angry, and full of negativity? Maybe we need to forgive that person. Bhagavatam is incredibly transcendental, but Bhagavatam is also extraordinarily practical. There is no question of reaching transcendence unless we've understood how to deal and function on this level of the material world that we're currently at. For a devotee, it should be easier to forgive because of the transcendental knowledge that we've been given. For a devotee, in any given situation, they have a very elevated vision of their own position, number one. They have a very elevated understanding of other people's position, number two. And they have a very elevated understanding of the Lord's position, number three. And because of this elevated understanding, it should be easier for them to forgive. Let me explain what I mean. A devotee's vision of themselves should be an elevated vision. Not an elevated vision in the sense that they think they're amazing themselves. But when they look at themselves, they realize, whatever I'm experiencing because it's connected to something that I've done in the past. Whatever I'm experiencing is a token reaction that I'm receiving for acts that I committed in the past. In other words, because a devotee knows that they are a soul on a journey, they realize that anyone and anything negative that they're encountering now is linked to their own past. And therefore, they don't point fingers at others when they go through difficulties, but they realize it's something to do with me. The second thing is that a devotee has an elevated understanding of others. When others are acting in irrational ways, when others are acting in unreasonable ways, when others are acting in agitated ways, a devotee knows that this is just a pure soul which is covered at the moment by different layers of illusion. And therefore, they don't hold it against people. They hate the disease, not the diseased person. And therefore, you have all these great saints who saw others, but all they saw was a pure soul who was covered by a certain amount of material illusion and therefore was acting in a negative way. And therefore, they're able to forgive. And the third thing is that a devotee has a very elevated understanding of the Lord. The devotee knows that whatever situations I've been put in are specifically crafted, engineered, and arranged by the Lord in order for my own evolution, elevation, and so when a devotee has all of this knowledge, then it should become easier to forgive. And in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, Prithu Maharaj is showing that quality of forgiveness. He was just able to let it go. And Vishnu, when he appears in the sacrificial arena, he very much praises, glorifies, and appreciates Prithu Maharaj for his quality of forgiveness, that he was able to just forgive Indra. So today, as we meditate on the Bhagavatam, as we meditate on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we meditate on all the saintly personalities who we've been blessed to come in contact with by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, let us try to remember this one quality, that if we're able to forgive, actually, before I say that, it's very, very interesting that there are many symptoms of bhava, right? Bhava is a very elevated, emotionally ecstatic, transcendental state. And in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami begins to explain the symptoms of someone who is in bhava. Now, when I talk to you and I say the word bhava, ecstatic emotion, I'm sure if I asked you what you think about, you may say, tears coming from the eyes, hair standing on end, body shivering, sweating, many, many kinds of emotions you may think about and associate with bhava or ecstatic emotion. But shall I tell you how Rupa Goswami explains it? He explains bhava in 9 symptoms. Kshantiravyata kalatvam viraktir manashunyata ashabandha samudkantha namagane sadaruchi ashaktistad gunakhyane pritistad vasatistale ityadayonu bhavasyo jata bhavan kure jane. Rupa Goswami describes bhava. And you know the very first symptom he gives of bhava? Kshantir. And Shantir means forgiveness. So, if we learn the quality of forgiveness, life will be much lighter. Life will be much more peaceful. And life will become enlightened with so much more spiritual happiness, because our mind will not be hijacked by negativity of the material, but rather by the transcendental positivity of Krishna's love and the spiritual world. And so, as they say, we get, and forget. And God gives, and gives, and then forgives. So Krishna is such a forgiving God. Krishna is giving us such an opportunity all the time. Krishna has let us off the hook so many times, despite how unreasonable, irrational, and unappreciative we may have been. Krishna keeps forgiving us and giving us another chance. So if we are truly to be followers of Krishna, we should also learn to forgive and follow in the footsteps of the great saintly personalities. And today, specifically, Prithu Maharaj, who was so much embodying that quality of forgiveness in his own life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Very nice, Prabhuji. Thank you very
so
much.
I mean, there could be many questions on forgiveness, but you'll have to forgive me. Because I think we may not have so much time to explore all of those questions. But maybe that's a part two.
Prabhuji, can I ask you if you're able to take a couple of questions, please? If anyone has a couple of questions.
Okay, sure. Yeah, sure.
Comments or realizations. You can unmute your mic and ask your questions or share your realizations. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prasad Mataji, Hare Krishna.
What an amazing class. It was short and so informative. And like you said, this topic, forgiveness, creates so many questions in your mind. And, well, I am not going to take up a lot of time, but just one thing that comes to my mind. Usually when there is a dispute, there are two parties involved. So maybe you are willing to, the one person may be willing to forgive, forget, and move on. But if the other person does not want to reciprocate in the same way, what do you do?
Thank you so much. We can only work within our circle of influence. There is a circle of influence and there is a circle of concern. And we can only influence ourselves. Yeah. So what we can do is, if we're willing to forgive and forget, then at least our conscience is clear that I've done everything I can do. And now really it's according to their free will and how Krishna inspires them from within their own heart. Yes. And so in any given situation, the main thing we have to ask ourselves is, have I done everything on my side to rectify the situation? Mm-hmm. And if you have, beyond that, all we can do is pray. Pray for the well-being of those personalities, and ultimately pray for them that they can also move on from that negativity in their life. Because if they're not able to move forward from that negativity in their life, neither they will be able to find any happiness either. So that's all we can do.
Very nice. Thank you.
Let me share one thing with all of you. I know there are probably many more questions, but I think this is incredible. And I really want to share it with you. Mm-hmm. There was one, as we know, when the Nazi regime was there, there were many concentration camps. So there was one concentration camp in a place called Ravensbrück. And in Ravensbrück, nearly 50,000 women were killed. And later on, many years later, after all of those women had been killed, they went there to reconstruct the place. And in the midst of all the rubble, they found a prayer. Right? This was a prayer written by one of the ladies who was about to be killed in this concentration camp. And shall I read you the prayer that she had penned probably a few weeks or months before she herself was going to be killed in that concentration camp? Shall I tell you what her prayer was? Please listen carefully.
Yes, Bravo.
Oh, my Lord. Remember not only the men and women of good will, but remember those also of evil will. My dear Lord, do not remember the suffering that those evil persons have inflicted upon us. Remember the fruits that we were given due to this suffering, our camaraderie, our loyalty, our humility, the courage, the generosity, the greatness of heart that all of us experienced in this concentration camp in the midst of this greatly suffering situation. When you come to judge the evildoers, let all of the fruits that we have benefited from in this difficult situation become their forgiveness. Can you imagine? Can you imagine making such a prayer? That is Vaishnav. Vaishnav means one who forgives someone even before they've committed an offense. How can we understand such saintliness? This is what it means to be Vaishnav. Yes, Vaishnav means one who's chanting 16 rounds. Yes, Vaishnav means one who's reading Bhagavatam. Yes, Vaishnav means one who wakes up for Mangalarti. But if you do all of those things, but we don't develop humility, we don't develop compassion, and we don't learn to forgive, then we have to ask ourselves, have I really developed the heart of a Vaishnav, or have I simply adopted the activities of a Vaishnav? And therefore, this is what I wanted to share with you today.
Wonderful response, Shrutava Prabhu. Thank you very much. Wonderful.
So much for your response. Thank you.
Thank you. Prabhuji.
Prabhuji, can I ask one question, please? Just one more question.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much for a very insightful, thought-provoking class. But my question was that, you know, they say that with devotional service, detachment comes. So would forgiveness come as part of your, as you get deeper into your devotional service? Would that be a byproduct of your devotional service, like any other detachment?
Yes. As we become more and more connected to Krishna, and we're experiencing more and more in the love of Krishna, then when we're nourished by the love of Krishna, then we become so filled with that love that, number one, we don't need anything from anyone. And number two, we actually seek to share that love and want everyone to experience that love. And so 100%, as you become more and more connected to Krishna, the quality of forgiveness and compassion comes naturally. However, in order to become connected to Krishna, you need to have clear connection. You need to have a clear mind. You need to be able to focus. You need to be able to give your heart, your mind, and your full attention. But the problem is, when we hold grudges, when we hold negativity, when we feel as though we are victims, when we feel that bitterness towards others, then it prevents us from focusing on Krishna in such a way that we can develop a very deep connection of love with him.
Yeah.
And therefore, on one level of the intellect at least, and contemplation, we have to learn to forgive. And then you're right, eventually forgiveness comes as a very natural thing within us. But at least at our stage of being sadhakas, we have to engender a level of forgiveness, even when it's not spontaneous, on the level of philosophy and intellect, in order to create the headspace and the heart space to connect.
Yes. Thank you. That's wonderful. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much.